What is up? What is going on, everybody? The three of us are so perfect. Some have said we were made in a lab, just like the main characters from this movie. We'll talk about it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me for the first time in 3 years? It's been a long time. In person. I don't know if this will make it go smoother or if it'll make it go so much worse, but Mike Duranik and Brad Miller here with me. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing very well. We just did a fantasy football draft, for those that didn't know, and I'm three beers in, so, like, yeah. You know, it's going to be a good night. We're going to talk some Jurassic Park, and it's great to be in the same room with you fellas to do this.
Yeah, the thunder's rolling out, giving us the ambiance for this. You know, the storm plays a huge role in this movie. We've got it going. Hopefully we don't lose the power in the middle of this, because then none of you are going to hear this. But I'm excited to be here with you.
All right, let's get into it. We are talking the original Jurassic Park this week, because when this episode drops, it will be the opening night for Jurassic World Dominion, the finale of the second trilogy of the Jurassic era, is what they're calling it. They're saying it's the end of the Jurassic era. I think another $1 billion at the box office will make them change their tune on that. I'm sure there'll always be dinosaurs running around. But it all started somewhere, and it was this adaptation of a Michael Crichton book. We just talked about Michael Crichton a couple weeks ago because he wrote Twister. This is a very different level of writing. I would call this one closer to high art, at least the book. But it came out in 1993, so I will ask you guys, turn the clocks back to 1993, what was your first experience with Jurassic Park? Was it in theaters? Did you catch it on TV later? How did you come to know this film?
I absolutely saw it in the theater. I remember sitting there, and this was the first movie of its kind. I think it was probably like bigger and more epic than just about anything I had seen to this point, because you know you're going to see these dinosaurs on screen. And I remember that cage at the beginning. And what year did this come out? 93?
Yes.
So I was 12, because I hadn't turned 13 yet that year. And I'll tell you what, this can scare the crap out of a 12-year-old. But great experience in the theater. Loved it.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the theater, but it was not long after it had come out on video that I did see it. And I told Brad this off the air, but as I was thinking back through, setting aside like cartoon movies that now, because of my kids, I've seen in an entirely different category of times, this one definitely crosses the red eye threshold for me, and is, I've got to believe, in a solid number three, behind only Happy Gilmore and The Rock for movies that I have seen the most in my life. I have seen this movie so many times. I know it so well. I so vividly remember watching it the first time. And yeah, Brad, I'm a little younger than you, and it was not a a pleasant watch in terms of the horror aspect of it, but extremely well done, and yet it kept me hooked in even at a young age and coming back. I'm also a huge Michael Crichton fan. I've read all of his books, his main books. I've even read some of the ones he published under a different name prior to going mainstream. And yeah, this book is incredible. But as I'm sure we'll get into, one of the unique things about this is that rare movie that the book is great in its own right. The movie has some fundamental differences than the book, but delivers as a, you know, together but yet a separate piece of art. And so, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I did not see this in theaters. It came out a couple years before I was born. I don't have a distinct memory of the first time I watched this, which is pretty strange for a movie that is this iconic and a movie that I appreciate as being iconic. But I do have the memories of... I have the distinct memories of the T-Rex and the kids in the car and the Velociraptor and whatever the dinosaur is that's got like the fins out the side of its head. Like, there are so many moments in this movie that are just burned into my skull. And I don't remember being scared as a kid, but rewatching it this time, the sentiment that both of you hit on, this is one of, and this, I think this entire franchise is one of the most like misleading advertised franchises ever, but it works. So this one made, I mean, there's been re-releases of this movie. So this movie has grossed over $1 billion, which is shocking for a movie from the 90s. But again, that's because they've put it out time and again. Both of the current trilogy films have grossed over $1 billion. And I feel like when a Jurassic movie comes out, it's sold as like a happy-go-lucky family fun time at the theater. And it is frightening and horrifying. Mm-hmm. And it is very, very violent. It's pushing the edges of PG-13. And they kind of stopped doing that. I don't know if you guys have seen the previews for Dominion, which is the newest one that's coming out here. Openly, they're not hiding it anymore. There's velociraptors like biting dudes' heads off in this preview, like, but still there's like the fun music in the background. So they sell it one way, it's something else, but families still go to see it and it makes a ton of money. So it's been very successful for a reason. I don't want to give too much away about the success of this movie, even though something that's iconic you guys already know. But we have a game to play. We have to play the Rotten Tomatoes game. I believe it's me versus Mike. Correct, I think.
I mean, I lose all the time, so I assume, yeah.
Well, I think last week I covered my bases. I was like, well, if I was going to actually guess something, and that ended up being right. So now I'm on the hot seat. I got to guess right off the bat. Mike gets to come in and try to snipe me. Look, something this iconic, it's hard to imagine. This thing is in the 90s, right? I'm just trying to guess where it's at to let Mike go around me. And I'm going to say, I'm going to just go with 94. I'm not going to completely split the difference between 90 and 100, and I'm going to let Mike see where he falls on it. But I'm going to go 94 for Jurassic Park.
Well, that's easy for me because I would have thought that it would have been lower than that. So I'm going to take the 93. I'll match the year that it came out. I would have put it probably 88, 89. I don't think it would have hit quite that 90 range. Although the CGI was great for the time. So, Brad.
Well, I hope that before Mike dies, he admits to cheating at this game. Because, yeah, he was one percentage point off. It was 92. So Ethan, I guess, kind of made it difficult on him, but, you know, maybe not. There's a whole lot of numbers lower than 94 for Mike to pick from there. So, Mike with 93 and Jurassic Park Rotten Tomatoes is 92.
Now, but as you besmirch my bad name tonight, I did, well before we came to the close of the rookie draft, I said I had booked it out for 2 hours, and I was within a minute, so I can't even get credit for that. Maybe I'm just good at prognostication.
He's very clairvoyant, so.
He is. Clairvoyant Mike.
Yeah, I mean, this game should be almost impossible for the person in my spot, because you have to hit it on the head, or it's just 50-50 for the other person. Mike just always happens to just get it exactly right, not give someone a shot. But it was close. So it is sitting at 92, you said, Brad?
92,
yes. So the next question that I always ask you guys, and then, I mean, probably will lead in a little bit more to what we were saying about some of the horrifying nature of some of the deaths in this movie, but is Rotten Tomatoes correct? 92% for the original Jurassic World. Where are you guys at with that?
Wow, that's a little bit high for me. I think that, I think it's a good movie. I think where it misses, honestly, it missed by advertising, like you said, for a family film. Like, it's not really what it is as advertised. So I think that throws me off a little bit, because you kind of expect this, like, more cartoonish sort of cool yet a little bit scary sort of thing. I mean, and this was vicious. There was some nasty moments in there, you know, and I think it also messes with me a little bit when it's children that are in peril. And, you know, like for most of the film, it's the children that are the ones being hunted here. And, you know, you get the, obviously the Jeff Goldblum, you know, shirtless pose. That takes it down a couple percentage points for me for the corniness, you know, because, like, who really needs to see that, especially at his age in this film? I don't know if you guys know how old he is, but he's much older than you think in this movie. So
I thought you were going to ask who actually sits like that, and I was going to say, hold on a second, Brad. That's just my normal pose.
It's a decent movie. it's not one of my favorites, but it's rewatchable just because it's iconic for what it was back then. I'd land it somewhere probably in the low to mid 80s, 83 to 85, somewhere in there.
Well, as I said in the game, I would have put it in the upper 80s, 87, 88, 89. I'll tell you, I'm going to answer the question two ways for you tonight, Ethan. Why Rotten Tomatoes is right and why it's wrong. So why it's wrong, Brad just kind of gave you a lot of the reasons. I will say some of the dialogue is not the greatest. It's a little corny, right? And sometimes that plays really well. Sometimes it doesn't play well. I do think all of the characters are pretty darn well cast. I think that that's where they're right. But ultimately, I would lean towards right. And here's the biggest reason for that. It's that this CGI mixed with the models that they used has held up remarkably well. I mean, maybe you guys disagree, but in watching this, I almost feel like some of the new CGI feels faker than this because the computer generation just clearly doesn't fit in as well with the human beings. And so in some ways, this may be peak, you know, coming out of the 80s, this was, incredible for its time. But almost 30 years later, it has held up so well in terms of the special effects that that's where I think that their score ultimately is probably more right than it's wrong.
Yeah, so where I'm at as well, it's so interesting to ask this question, is it right or wrong? As a movie that I go back to rewatch, it's probably been a decade since I've rewatched this. I think it's an incredibly fun time to watch it, but it's just not one that I'm like, what should I watch today? Let's throw on Jurassic Park. Certainly do not throw on The Lost World or Jurassic Park 3 either. With the special effects, I think the parts with the CGI, because again, I'm looking at it as this movie came out in 1993. Holy crap, like that T-Rex looks awesome for 1993. Some of what actually took me out of it this time was the practical effects. They kind of looked a little weird. The one with the fins looks okay, and I think they're using that again in Jurassic World Dominion as just like a callback. But like when they're petting the one that's, I don't know if it's sick apparently, like it just seems weird that they went with that, and I know what they were trying to do. And it's this weird blend of like, I get practical looks cool, but should you have just done the whole thing CGI? Because that's kind of what we're getting with now. I saw Top Gun Maverick. One of the coolest action movie experiences that you will ever see. Go see that in theaters. It's amazing. I know we kind of like said that Top Gun Maverick's amazing. It's actually like a legitimately great movie on top of being action. And now everybody's asking the question because there's so much practical in that. Should everybody just go practical now? We said, like with Mad Max Fury Road, people said the same. Should everybody just go practical now? No, you shouldn't. Sometimes practical doesn't look as great. And that was some of the stuff that took me out of it. As an iconic film, though, I will give them credit to say, yes, it's in the 90 percentile, because how bad, like, Lost World is meh, Jurassic World 3 is terrible, or Jurassic Park 3 is terrible. Jurassic World came back, and all of a sudden it makes over $1 billion, almost $2 billion. Why? Because people forget how bad 2 and 3 are, because you just feel good about the memories of Jurassic Park. So there's some things that took me out of it, there's some things that didn't, but because it's so iconic and it lives up to being just a larger-than-life story, I'll say that it's right in that sense. So that's where we're at with Rotten Tomatoes. Let's talk a little bit about who made this movie. Brad, you already mentioned Jeff Goldblum, so we can start there because, oddly enough, I mean, I know that he is the third of the adult characters, maybe even the fourth, I guess, if you're really in on Sir Richard Attenborough, but Jeff Goldblum's who I think of. And if you guys disagree, like, we can hop in on this point too, but like,
Sam Jackson, baby.
Okay. Hold on to your butts, you know? That's what I should have done the cold open with. Gosh darn it.
Well, yeah, instead of that corny crap you brought this time about us being perfect.
Well, you know.
You admitted that you were feeling a lot of pressure being here in person and trying to, you know, find the magic words.
It did change everything.
So, but yeah, Sam Jackson, also a good one, but continue on Goldblum.
He is who I think of, and just his lines in it, which I mean, I'm sure we'll quote at some point in this. I've always just been a massive Jeff Goldblum fan, even though he is a complete goof. I'm shocked that they used him in the shirtless pose. Like, I don't envision Jeff Goldblum ever being a sex symbol. He's a goofball. But I love it. So I guess, where do you guys go? Who is, like, the true lead that you think back on in this movie? And then peaks. Is this the peak for everybody in this movie? Is it something different? Where do you kind of go with the characters that we see here?
I mean, I think for me, Jeff Goldblum is the actor that I think of. I mean, honestly, I think of Wayne Knight, too. Like, even though it was a smaller role, it was an integral role to what they were doing, and he was the main, I always get it confused, antagonist. Is that what we're going for? Like, him and the dinosaurs, I guess, were the main antagonist. And, but yeah, Jeff Goldblum, you know, Sam Neill and Laura Dern were great. I don't know, for some reason I can't get into the Richard Attenborough character. It's just something a little bit over the top with it, but yeah, Jeff Goldblum for me. And the one thing that stood out about those while I'm talking about them was the age difference between Sam Neill and Laura Dern. I didn't realize there's like a 20-year age difference, and I never picked up on that until it was brought to my attention. And then that's when I looked up Jeff Goldblum, and when I realized that he's 4 years older than my father, I about fell over, because that man is in good shape and takes good care of himself. For he's, I believe, 71 now. So, yeah, it was.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, Sam Neill also sneaky old, and you don't realize that until you start looking that stuff up. Did either of you guys ever read the book?
No.
I think I tried. I don't think I got all the way through.
So that's one of the fundamental differences. You mentioned the John Hammond character played by Richard Attenborough. One of the differences that I think also then led to why The Lost World didn't work, his character actually dies in the book.
Okay.
He's trying to put the park back together after the storm, and he gets killed by the dinosaurs. And it puts a very dark tint on the end in a way that the movie doesn't have. And I think that that's where one of the adaptations that didn't work as well, not so much that it didn't work for this movie, but it set The Lost World up on an entirely different trajectory than the book that Crichton actually wrote. But I would agree, for me, it's always been Goldblum in this, but it's always been because in the book and in the movie, Ian Malcolm is one of the most compelling characters in this type of a movie. The chaos theory, the way he presents it, the way he presents himself, you know, with this, like, just confident, cocky attitude, but you can't help but follow his logic, his words. You know, you could take away the you know, scene where he's sitting there with his shirt open. Although I suspect that Goldblum was like, well, look, I'm willing to do whatever you want, but is there any chance? Like, this is the best shape I've ever been in my life. Is there any chance? As far as your question about peaks, I mean, for me, this is Goldblum's peak. Although I do love him in other movies. He was also phenomenal in Independence Day. And so it's a real close tie, but I think just my love of the character Ian Malcolm carries the day there.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes that interesting is I don't think of anything else from Sam Neill's career. I mean, I know he's in other things, I understand that, but like, it's Jurassic World, and I have to sit and actually think about what else has he been in. And a lot of the same for Laura Dern, even though, again, I know that she's been in other things. Jeff Goldblum, I can rattle off 10, 15 things that I enjoy him in.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so iconic, we haven't even talked about the hair. But I probably lean Independence Day just because I watch Independence Day more. And he has a lot, just so many more funnier lines. And he's probably got way more screen time than Independence Day 2. He gets hurt in this, and then like there's a section of the movie where he's not really in it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Independence Day, he is truly the co-lead with Will Smith. I mean, it's 50-50 there. So I'd probably lean there, but it's just interesting that there are so many more things we can name with Jeff Goldblum, but we still go back to this versus where the other two are at. But did you have a thought on Sam Neill?
You ever seen Event Horizon?
No.
Yeah, that's why you think of only this with Sam Neill. I wouldn't recommend that you necessarily see it. That goes definitely down the horror track.
Okay.
But if you see it, it's an interesting Sam Neill performance, and you'll never unsee the ending of his character in it.
Yeah, so, I mean, the other side of this, talk about production-wise, is obviously Steven Spielberg. We've done Steven Spielberg before with Minority Report. I don't think we've done any other Steven Spielberg movies. We never ended up doing Saving Private Ryan. That'd really be...
Yeah, we didn't do any of the Indiana Jones movies.
No, not yet. So, I mean, definitely a lot of options that I'm sure we will get to at some point as, you know, this show goes on. But it is interesting that these are the two Steven Spielberg movies we've done, Minority Report and this, being two vastly different creations, mm-hmm. both adaptations of books, which he's done a lot of in his time. And I think it goes to show, like, I mean, the easy answer when people are like, who's the greatest living director? Well, Steven Spielberg. Like, sometimes you don't like to go with the easiest answer, but you just see what he can put on screen, the way he can bounce back and forth between things like this and Jaws and Indiana Jones that are these adventures. And then more dramatic pieces like Minority Report, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, things like that. It is just nice to take a step back sometimes and appreciate greatness when you see it, instead of just like, well, it's the easy answer, so I don't want to say it. It's kind of the easy answer for a reason, because of what he's able to do time and time and time again.
Yeah, he definitely is not pigeonholed into any one type of movie, which I think makes it all the more impressive.
So, real quick, before we transition to anything else, the Jurassic World series. I mean, because you guys both have pretty fond things to say about Jurassic Park. I know it seems like we're all pretty much in agreement on Lost World 3. Where are you at with Jurassic World? Because I love them. And I'm actually the most excited for Dominion that I've been for either of the other two coming out. And I think a lot of that has to do with Jeff Goldblum seemingly having a pretty significant part in this movie. But where are you guys at? Because I'm a big fan. I know Fallen Kingdom got not great reviews. I still enjoyed it for the fact that it was just so wildly different from anything else in the series. Have you guys even seen World and Fallen Kingdom?
I didn't see the last one.
Okay.
But I saw the one before that. Kind of the same ending of this one, I believe, where the T-Rex... No, it's opposite, right? The Velociraptor takes out the T-Rex at the end of the one I saw.
It's like a combination. Like, the Velociraptors and the T-Rex work together to kill the new big bad thing
in gotcha.
The final fight, yeah.
So that's teamwork. That's the one I saw. I don't believe I saw the one with the big, like, monster that came out of the water. There's a scene that I saw in the trailer where it jumps out of the water.
I think that, remember, Brad's three beers deep, because I'm pretty sure you've still just been talking about the same movie. I think all of this is in Jurassic World.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe. I don't remember seeing that scene in the movie that I watched. And I'm three Miller Lights in, so I'd lay off on the, I'm not too buzzed. This is like drinking water, so... I'm still thinking very coherently, but I don't remember seeing that scene because I thought, I don't even know what that thing was jumping out of the water. But, yeah, I mean, it all blends together for me, which is kind of my point. None of these movies as a standalone film, other than this one, because it's the first of its kind, really stands out to me. Everything else, you could say it was in this one, it was in this one. It was. I can't argue with you because I don't know. I can't even tell you how many of the series I've seen because... I'm not super interested in it. This next one that comes out looks very cool, though. Yep. I want to see it. I like the scene that they show her going underwater, and you see the dinosaur like yell or whatever it's doing to hunt her, which looks really, really cool. I gotta say, though, on a different side note, the roller coaster at Universal Studios, the Velocicoaster. Is fantastic. One of the best roller coasters I've ever been on, and I got to ride it like three or four times last time we went down there. Great ride. So, yeah.
I've not been to that studio. The old Jurassic Park ride out in California, where you just about fall into the T-Rex's mouth before you plunge down, I was a fan of also. So, two thoughts on this, I guess. I'll divide them into the old and the new. What I will say, so the Lost World... The book wasn't written until the movie was such a success that Spielberg went back to Crichton and said, would you write a sequel for me that we could adapt? Which I think is unique. It normally doesn't go that way, but he actually writes a book that then gets adapted, but he writes the book because Spielberg asks him to, right? And again, you can see, as I mentioned, the movie ends differently than the book, the first one, so it sets it up in a weird trajectory, and I think The Lost World should have been a lot better because it was a Malcolm-centered thing. The book is far better than the movie. I enjoyed Jurassic and its Kingdom, right? Or no, that's this one.
There's Jurassic World.
This is Brad's point.
Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and now this one is Dominion.
Well, the fourth one, the reboot.
Okay, Jurassic World.
Jurassic. Okay, so Jurassic World. There you go. So I enjoyed it. Although it felt to me an awful lot like the Jurassic Park version of Rise of Skywalker, where they're like, hey, good news, we're going to bring back all of your nostalgic feelings, and it's going to be the same thing, only just slightly bigger. And but I enjoyed it. I think that it was good. I did see Fallen Kingdom, although to Brad's broader point, I don't know that I could tell you anything about the movie. And so I do think that, Brad, you've got a good point, which is they had an amazing adaptation of a book and have been able to keep the good times rolling. And when I saw the trailer open up for this one, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go see this. And then Malcolm comes on the screen, Jeff Goldblum's there, and I'm like, oh, I'm 100% in. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen, just this trailer. So, I mean, I don't get to the movies often, but there's a good chance that I will find a way to go see this.
Yeah, so I mean, I was going to make that exact same comparison with Jurassic World and Rise of Skywalker. It's a rehash where they took Chris Pratt, who I'm a big fan of, and he is definitely cut more from the Ian Malcolm vein than he is the Dr. Alan Grant vein, which I think is a smart decision.
Mm-hmm.
Fallen Kingdom, I mean, it is bonkers crazy. Like, they get into cloning people, making the dinosaurs that they create mind controllable for the military. It turns into a horror movie at one point, running through a house. I mean, it's out there. But I appreciate the fact that they gave us the Rise of Skywalker treatment. Here's Jurassic Park again. We're going to go for it. And they went for it. And now in Dominion, it's back to, here's all the old people you love, go have
That's
fun.
That's the one I saw, right? The mind control one?
I don't know. At this point, I have no idea.
Where he's... The Velociraptor Blue?
He's training them in that one. He's not mind control. He's in that one, in Jurassic World, they're treating them like puppies, and you can just train dinosaurs. In Fallen Kingdom, it's like a chip in the head, and you can point a laser...
Jurassic World is the one that I've seen.
Yes, okay.
Fallen Kingdom's the one where the dinosaur like claws like creeping up the bed to like pull the sheet down. So yes, I did
turns
see
into
that.
A full-blown horror.
It does move full-blown horror.
Yeah, very weird. But again, and now we're back to just like, here's the nostalgia. But this is where they have to go. At some point, you had to give everybody dinosaurs in the real world. Out like, not just in a park or in a house. Like, we're going to just spread the dinosaurs out there and see what happens. I know Lost World kind of ends like that, but it is what it is. Anyways, whole diatribe. The interesting thing is that these movies, both the first ones, cracked a billion. Dominion's going to make a billion. And if you think it's not, you're insane. Probably the same people that think Avatar 2 is not going to make a billion. But different conversation for December, probably when we do Avatar. Which Mike and I have talked about. Maybe not to Brad. But be ready for Avatar, Brad. So let's wrap it up here. Let's close it up with favorite scene. Where would you guys go for the original Jurassic Park? Which I think is tough, because we've talked about it, there's a ton of just super iconic scenes. I can go with mine, if you'd like me to, because both of you seem pretty stressed out by this choice. At least Mike is fighting
it's
with his childhood itself.
We'll let you go first.
I purposely didn't mention this at the beginning, because I wanted to save it. There's so many things that stick with me. But the thing that I do remember terrifying me as a kid, and it still plays so well today, it's the kitchen scene with the Velociraptors. I think that's the best scene in the movie. I think that's the one that's shot the best with the special effects mixed with some of the practical effects in it that actually didn't pull me out of it. Those kids, I mean, and at that point in the movie, they're not safe. There's no guarantee. Usually if kids are in danger in a movie, you're like, well, something's going to save them. Not 100% guaranteed that these kids are going to get out unscathed, based on what they've led up to this with. So I think it's shot really well. I think it's terrifying, yet exciting at the same time, thrilling, all that stuff. So the kitchen scene is my pick for best scene in Jurassic Park.
Well, we'll cut a couple minutes off this because I'm going to run it back. Same scene for me. That's the one that just has stood there. That's the one I was looking forward to the most with this rewatch. So... yep, same one for me.
I'll just give an honorable mention to the way that they do the entire storm rolling in and Wayne Knight's character Nedry, you know, setting everything up to leave and stealing the embryos all the way through the Dilophosaurus hopping in the car to end him.
How great is that? I mean, the moment where he finally gets his just rewards. I do also remember that as a kid, just hating Wayne Knight. Also, probably because I watched a lot of Seinfeld as a kid, and I didn't like Newman. So it was finally just like, we've got him. We've got him locked up and good to go. So outside of hold on to your butts, I mean, Mike, you look like you want to jump in. I don't want to steal I just stole some favorite scenes, so I'll let you guys hop in.
I don't have one that would stand out. I mean, I kind of love every time Ian Malcolm says anything, and I'm assuming that Mike's going with a line from him. So instead of jumping on Mike's toes, I'll let him pick the best one.
Well, for me, it's one of the ones that I quote an awful lot in life in different situations. But it's just when he looks at him and it says, right, your scientists were so preoccupied with if they could that they didn't stop to think if they should. I think it's a great line. It plays very well in life. And it really gets to the core of Malcolm as a character, the logic behind chaos theory and his kind of mathematical approach to things, but very logical. And it's just, it's a heck of a line.
Yeah, I mean, oh. No, I already said
sorry.
All the Ian Malcolmisms that are thrown out there, but yeah, that was definitely the best one.
That has to be it. That has to be the best line from the movie. The line that makes me chuckle the most is if Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists. Like that again. I think it's the fact that his character is just so shocked at the stupidity of this idea. Like, mm-hmm. Sure, it's awesome. But what the actual hell are you guys thinking? Like,
there will eventually be dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, I think he's the best. Everything he says is the best. We're all in agreement.
Although that does lead to the best Attenborough line, right? Where he just says, I really do hate that man.
Yes.
Great movie.
It is. It was a fun time. It's good rewatching it, reliving that experience. We hope all of you guys enjoyed it as well. That'll wrap up our conversation of Jurassic Park. Make sure you join us next week. We're definitely shifting gears into some different topics next week as we talk Dead Poets Society. So same time frame, I think. I don't know if it was the 80s or
89.
89, so around that same time. Going way back, but again, very different viewing experience. That'll be next week with Dead Poets Society. This week was Jurassic Park. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.